All right, we'll call the regular council meeting to order. Chris, would you do roll?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Council President Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Mayor Steer?
Yes. If you will join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
You may be seated.
First item on the agenda is consent agenda. Are there any questions, comments, or a motion to approve?
Move we approve the consent agenda?
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda as presented. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Purple Heart City Presentation and Proclamation. Ned Barker? Yeah, if you'd like to step up and state your name and address and...
Ned's going to do the presentation.
Okay.
I'll step up, Mr. Mayor.
Welcome, thank you. This is quite an honor. We appreciate it.
Thank you. My name is Donald Toronto, and I am the Senior Vice Commander of the Idaho Department and also the Chief Joseph, Chapter 509 of the Military Order of the Purple Heart of the United States of America. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about the Purple Heart, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, and guests. The Purple Heart is the oldest military decoration in the world today, and it was first award made available to the common soldier. General George Washington instituted this award, but he called it the Badge of Military Merit. And it was his idea to award the Badge of Military Merit to common soldiers for extraordinary valor. And now, if you think about that, that's the precursor of the Medal of Honor. Fast forward 150 years, on Washington's 200th birthday in 1932, it was reinstituted and designated the Purple Heart Medal. When George Washington initially presented the medal, it was not metal. It was cloth, and of course, it didn't have his picture of him on it. He wasn't that vain, I guess. And it was a purple heart on a gold background cloth, and it was sewn onto the jackets of the soldiers. So it was reinstituted in 32, as I said, into a Purple Heart Medal with George Washington's bust on it. And of course, we know that it's awarded to men and women of the armed forces of the U.S. who are wounded by an instrument of war. And of course, it's also posthumously given to those, the next of kin, to those who give their lives in battle. It's specifically a combat decoration that no soldier seeks to receive. My brothers in arms and I had no wish to get a Purple Heart. At least I can speak for myself. You guys want it? Maybe they want it. I don't know. So as recipients of the Purple Heart, we shed our blood, some shed their life, for the freedoms that we enjoy today, being able to meet here, being able to pledge our allegiance to the flag. And we feel that it's necessary to keep this symbol prominent in our minds and in our sight so that we don't forget. Over 1.7 million Purple Hearts have been awarded since the Revolutionary War. And to date, there are over 3,700 Idahoans who have received the Purple Heart Medal. So we also feel that it's vital to keep this precious symbol. I never really thought of the Purple Heart as a precious symbol, but I guess I'm pretty darn proud of it. It's vital to keep this symbol in the forefront of our minds as a reminder that blood was shed to ensure our rights, and as we say, all gave some, and some gave all. And I have the sign to present to you folks in the city.
Oh, nice.
Isn't that beautiful?
That's awesome.
That is very beautiful.
So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Actually, what I'll do is I'll read this proclamation, and then we'll get a couple pictures with that.
Perfect.
Whereas the people of the city of CUNA have a great admiration and the utmost gratitude for all the men and women who have selfishly served their country and this community in the armed forces, and whereas veterans have paid the high price of freedom by leaving their families and their communities and placing themselves in harm's way for the good of all, and whereas the contributions and sacrifices of the men and women from the city of CUNA who have served in the armed forces have been vital in maintaining the freedoms and way of life enjoyed by our citizens, and whereas many men and women in uniform gave their lives while serving in the armed forces, and whereas many citizens of our community have earned the Purple Heart Medal as a result of being wounded while engaged in combat with an enemy force, construed as a singularly meritorious act of essential service, and whereas March 1st, 2016 has officially been designated as the day of, in the city of CUNA, to remember and recognize veterans who are recipients of the Purple Heart Medal. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Joe Steer, Mayor of CUNA, Idaho, hereby proclaim the city of CUNA as a Purple Heart City, honoring the service and sacrifice of our nation's men and women in uniform, wounded or killed by the enemy while serving to protect the freedoms enjoyed by all Americans. Gather around this cool sign with all these fine veterans.
Awesome, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, no. You're very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you again, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I need this right here. This right here. That doesn't mean you get
trouble. Okay. soon as I give someone their the signs you can order, and actually, the city's responsible for the cost of one of these.
Okay.
The parking signs, we can get you.
Okay.
As soon as I give them, I just let it be.
All right, thank you. Oh, that was nice.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a public hearing. Consider to approve case number 15-3-AN and 15-03-LS Calhoun Liberty Investments Annexation and Lot Split. Trevor.
Good evening, Mayor Steer, President Jones, council members. For the record, Trevor Kessner, Cuna City Planner, 763 West Avalon. The application before you tonight seeks approval for an annexation and subsequent lot split. The site is located at 1425 South School Avenue. So the south parcel will remain approximately 1.6 acres, and the current owner, Larry Calhoun, will remain on his primary residence on the site, which would turn the north half into 3.6 acre parcel. Both parcels, as they annex in, will come in as an R6 designation. That designation fits with the comprehensive plan and the future land use map for this area. The applicant has submitted all the required documents for the request and has complied with planning and zoning staff recommendations. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended annexation on January 26th. Property owners within 300 feet of the site were notified by mail of tonight's hearing. The site was posted to reflect tonight's hearing date, and notification was also published in the Cuna Melba newspaper. Based on staff's review of the application, Planning and Zoning concludes the application complies with Title VI of Cuna City Code and the Comprehensive Plan. We would forward a recommendation to you of approval, and basically what I'd be looking for here is the annexation action prior to the lot split. So if you have any questions for me, I'm happy to answer them.
Will we be doing the lot split tonight also?
I'm requesting that. What we need to do is do the annexation first, motion to annex first, and then a motion to split with the ordinance there. And I know that the ordinance is probably preemptive, but I had it all done, so it's there. So,
okay. Questions for Trevor?
Thank you.
Thank you, Trevor. Do we wish to have a discussion or?
Mayor, are we just doing the annexation first before we discuss the lot split? Or?
Yeah, so we'll do the case number 1503-AN.
And then we need no input from the applicant if he's here before we do that. Do you see a need?
I'm guessing yes. Oh. Yeah, if you would just state your name and address. Yep.
Logan Patton, 6205 Deer Flat Road, Napa, Idaho, 83686. And pretty simple and straightforward with what we're doing. And at this time, we don't actually have a specific. We have ideas of what we want to do with it, but annex it and get split and go from there.
Okay. Do you have questions?
Not regarding the annexation. So if nobody has any further questions, I move that we approve the annexation case number 15-03-AN.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve case number 15-03-AN, the annexation for Calhoun Liberty Investments. Do we need a roll call on that?
Yes.
I'm just, I don't recall if you opened the public hearing to...
I did not.
Okay, and if there's anybody that was going to testify.
So we need to open the public hearing portion for this. Do we have a motion for that?
We don't.
Yeah, I'll move that we open public hearing.
Do we have a second?
A second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
We did not have anybody sign up on the sign-up sheet for the public hearing. Was there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify? Okay, seeing none, we will close the public hearing portion, and then we can move on to your motion.
The mayor, I move that we approve case number 15-03-AN, annexation of 1425 North School Avenue.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Council President Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Case number 15-03-AN is approved. So now we're on to 1503-LS for the lot split.
Mayor, if I may.
Yes.
Thank you. The only question I have regarding the lot split, I think it is a concern that's been brought up. I have no hesitation to allow the landowner to do what he wishes with his property. It should be his choice. But I guess I guess there's been some concerns about the tree and the nesting. Is your intent to remove that tree?
No. That won't even be on our property once it's split off.
No, we have no intent to do anything with the tree. And afterwards, it will be on Mr. Calhoun's property once the split happens. But he's also informed us that he doesn't have any intention to do anything with the tree.
And that change in that, it's hard for me to see this on the map, but I think, is that regarding the fence line?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any further questions regarding that, so thank you.
Okay, you bet.
Okay, anything further? And we would entertain a motion to approve the 1503 lot split.
Based on the facts outlined in staff's report, I move we approve case number 15-03-LS with the conditions of approval as listed in the packet.
I second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Council President Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Okay, 15-03-LS for Calhoun Liberty lot split is approved. Thank you very much. Business items. Considering to adopt resolution number R20-2016, adopting the amendment to the planning area map. Wendy Howell.
This is just a resolution to approve the planning area map, which was originally approved at August 18th of last year. And it's a formality.
Okay. Any questions for Wendy? Thank you. So resolution R20-2016 is a resolution of the City of Cuna Council, Cuna, Idaho, adopting the amendment to the planning area map for the City of Cuna, Idaho, affirming that the prescribed notice and hearing requirements were met in accordance with Title 67, Chapter 65 of Idaho Code, and providing an effective date. And we would entertain a motion to adopt resolution.
Mayor, I move that we approve resolution number R20-2016.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to adopt resolution number R20-2016. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Council President Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Resolution number R20-2016 has now been adopted. Item B, consideration to approve resolution R19-2016 RFP for real estate consultant services to assist the city's economic development projects and inquiries. Richard Rhodes.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. For the record, Richard Rhodes. Mayor, I'll let you lead on this a little bit. I don't know if we kind of changed direction. I was asked to put together the resolution on this for the RFP for the economic development. I don't know if we're going to change course on that and perhaps go with an economic developer instead of a real estate consultant. So.
Yeah, so what's happened is we get a lot of requests for commercial properties that might work for companies doing nationwide searches. And the challenges that we've had is we get those requests and then we have generally maximum of 3 days to respond to those, so we are left scrambling trying to find to see if there's some properties around here that might fit that bring in some commercial development. So what we were originally talking about doing was hiring a realtor of choice, so to speak, so that somebody could put together what is available in the area, keep that updated. And so when these requests come in, we can go through them to tell us what is required, as how many acres, if there's water accessibility, sewer lines, you know, what rail lines, whatever else they might need, electricity and gas lines, whatever the case may be. So Chris kind of researched into that a little bit. We had some discussions with Jana Jones, who is the executive director of the Boise Valley Economic Partnership, and she has agreed to have a phone conversation with us to see maybe there's a different direction we should do this. Maybe we can come up with an economic development type person that works solely for the city. So we're kind of thinking of maybe going that direction. I guess so probably for tonight we would want to table this one and then we will come back before council with a little more discussion and information on what direction we think we ought to go. So that's kind of where that stands right now. Unless, Chris, if you wanted to add anything to that or?
No, sir.
Okay. Wendy, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Mayor?
Yes.
I have one question.
How
sure. are you going to advertise the RFP?
Well, there's a process for that.
Throughout the valley?
We would like to advertise locally, but there's a process for that. I don't know, maybe Richard can explain how that works.
Depending on how broad we want to do it, either locally or up to Meridian, then over to the Treasure Valley, Boise included, to see what we get on the lines of commercial realtors.
I guess my question is, how would they be reimbursed upon development or?
That would be something that they would put in the
proposal.
In their proposal on it, if it would be a commission fee or if they would expect compensation from the city for time spent independent then of and probably absent of any commission. So there is some issues that they would have to present that we would have to then take a look at.
So we're not putting conditions on this proposal. We're taking proposal from the community at large then, and they will provide us with the options they would want on the agreement then?
That would be correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is actually a request for proposals, so they would give us proposals. But that is one of the issues that we were discussing as to kind of why we went the other direction, or why we may go the other direction, is do we want someone involved in that's actually making a profit for themselves? I think historically what we may run into is that they only want to provide information on properties that they represent. So if there's properties that someone else represents, we could actually end up missing out on some or something to that effect. That's why we're looking for some more direction on this. We thought we had a good plan, but I think we can come up with a better one. So,
how would you avoid a conflict of interest on something like this?
What I was envisioning in it was that they would put the proposal forward on how they expected the compensation. And you pose a good question, and one of the things I was going to do was run it past the Real Estate Commission on, you know, if they are compensated by an hourly rate, does that then preclude them from also receiving a commission on any property that closes? It is a concern.
So there's the possibility they would be paid a salary or a wage, and then on top of that, a commission once the property is sold.
I wouldn't prefer that, quite honestly. I think if we were able to bring them in as somebody who would compile those properties and make those available, that information to us, that then we could transmit out to the parties requesting it, that would be the ideal situation. I don't know if we could find somebody that would do it, knowing that on a lot of these properties we're talking large commissions. And is somebody going to be interested? If they're just local, are they going to be interested in potentially giving that commission-based income up to do something on an hourly basis where their market, they may have the opportunity for a large percentage of the market? Would somebody then from Meridian or Boise be interested in doing it on an hourly basis where they may not have that local interest ties to the community? I don't know that. That's why we were going to put it out generally and see what we came back with. It may be that we put it out and we don't get anything that's acceptable to the city.
I bet you it would be interesting to see what comes back. I find it hard that you would be able to find a solicitor only that person would feel like their license is being restricted if we were to put them as a solicitor only. So I wish you well.
And that's why we're having the discussions with Jen, as she's going to give us some direction, because most, a lot of cities already have that type of thing in place, so we want to see what direction is suggested there, because the more we thought about this, the more we thought there could be conflicts there that can create problems. So.
We don't have anybody in the house that might have the latitude of being able to go on the internet and see what's listed. Wendy?
Pardon?
Do we have anybody in-house that might have the experience to go on the internet and perform this within our confines?
Well, there's a couple of issues there. One is time. Restrictions of time that we're running into with them needing it within a small amount of time, or within a small time frame. there's no one in-house that has MLS to be able to locate the properties that are for sale.
The biggest issue is somebody's going to have to go and knock on doors and,
yes, well,
and have discussions and actually meet with people and see what's available. It might mean meeting with other realtors. It might mean meeting with property owners. The one that we had come up last week just made some phone calls to some property owners. Don't know if those are going to work out or fit or not, but we did scramble in-house to try to figure out what we could do there, and I'm not even sure that our proposals were properly presented. So that's kind of where this is all stemming from. And, I guess what we're saying here is we need some more time to research this out. So anyway, if there is no further discussion, if somebody would move to table that.
Just till the next meeting? Or?
Yeah, I think that's time enough to let us have. This week, I think we're having that phone meeting with Jim and George.
I move we table resolution number R19-2016 until the March 15th meeting.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to table resolution R19-2016. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next on the agenda, ex parte communication presentation, Richard Rhodes.
Again, Mayor, thank you. Good evening. For the record, Richard Rhodes. I've been asked to put together some topics for discussion, and these are the first two. There's a couple more in the pipeline dealing with findings of fact, conclusions of law, and they are interrelated in the due process portion of the quasi-judicial comes to the relationship to those adequate findings. So the next time when I make that presentation, we will tie that up. I was noticing just now that the outline that I have for the quasi-judicial legislative prepared has some court citations in it that I put in, and then it was recommended that those be left out because they're somewhat confusing. And what I'm looking at is the one that has that. So I have a sheet that I'll distribute after or through email that makes it a little bit clearer and doesn't have those citations in it. I was able to use the wonderful footnote just to note that those are all taken out, but I have those available. So it reads a little bit better. Attorneys oftentimes read and look at cases, as you'll see there, and most people wonder why they're there or what the heck they mean. So again, my apologies on that. I will get the one to you that reads a little bit easier without those case citations. Quasi-judicial versus legislative. I also put together a presentation that looks like a slideshow that talks about the legislative, quasi-judicial, and administrative, the types of actions that you deal with as council members. But essentially, a legislative act produces a rule or policy which has application to an open class or of people or properties. Quasi-judicial, then, is where you're making a decision where you are applying a general rule that impacts a specific individual interest or property. Permits, property specific, those are all quasi-judicial acts. And really it comes down to the distinction between the two is the amount of review that's available for an applicant that may feel that they were harmed by an action. Legislative actions have extremely limited judicial review. Quasi-judicial actions are subject to judicial review, and those are then looked at through the due process constraints. I've cited there the due process clause, both the U.S. And Idaho Constitution, that essentially, and you've probably heard it before, prohibit the state from depriving any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. What that generally means is you have to have a notice and opportunity for a hearing before that property you're deprived of that property. in the notice of the hearing, as you see, as some of these specific things come up in land uses, the meaningful opportunity and time to be heard. Is there any, excuse me, any questions on that so far? So the quasi-judicial, I guess a way to look at it then would be, is the act that I'm performing similar to what a judge may do, hearing testimony, receiving evidence, either documents or exhibits, making findings, and then having to render a decision applying the law or the rule to certain facts. Most of the time you're going to get into the due process quasi-judicial issues are in land use matters. Probably 85% of the time is where you're going to come across those. There are a couple other instances that you may come across those, but for the most part it's going to be in that land use arena. The due process then and the ex parte communications are related. It's well established that the due process requires that in reaching your decision, you must confine yourself to the record as established by the public hearing, and that's that ex parte portion of it. So on the ex parte portion of it, that's essentially if you have a communication that occurs outside of the public forum, that's your ex parte communication. And the case is cited there, and again, it's well established that you can only make your decision based upon that evidence or testimony presented at the public hearing. You can't go out on your own fact-finding mission and do a fact discovery and make your decision on that. Or receive information from the public at the grocery store or at the gas station where they're providing you information specific to a project that may, meaning, you know, if you know this piece of property is going to be developed or may likely be developed, and the property owner or developer comes to you and says, hey, I'd like to talk to you about this property and what we want to do with it, and, you know, we want to present these certain things to it, or things that are pending, you know, before the city, obviously. It's just a big no-no. Now, those things will happen, and if it's it happens, there's some guidelines there that you can do. And essentially, what you want to try to avoid is something coming up down the road where it's happened. There's a court case where some of the council members or commissioners went and looked at a piece of property, and then it got challenged and it got overturned. And really, it's one of those things that it comes back and it just doesn't look good. But it can be cured. There's a suggested form if that happens for the communication on that second page there. Basically, if you have that communication, either it's a letter, produce it, or a communication, document it. Disclose it, and so everybody knows that it happened, and then the decision can be made from there. These forms, and again, I'll give you that other one, I would suggest just kind of hanging on to them, and if questions arise, I'm more than happy to talk about them or answer them. I will stand for any questions.
Sorry, did you say you're going to email the form?
I can do whatever you want to. If that's easier, I'll just email it. You can replace it in the packet for your stuff. But.
Well, no, I mean, it mentions by providing the attached form to the city clerk, but I don't think there's
On that one, it's at the end of that. That's the one that says ex parte communication record.
It's not in here. We just have the...
Should be 7C407.
It would be page.
Oh, it's just like.
Yeah, it's.
It's just a little tiny piece of a page. It's not actually a. form?
Yeah, I just included it on this instead of making, it's just your suggested stuff to document if that communication takes place.
Oh, so there is no actual form? I just want to make sure if there's like a specific, like a form in the way that you're supposed to document it versus there's an actual form you're supposed to use.
No, this is just my suggestion of those things to document.
Okay.
If that occurs.
A form of a form.
A less formal form.
So it's more like by providing the attached information to the city clerk, not a form per se?
Correct.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yes, Mayor, Richard, if I could have the floor. On page 3 of 7, Richard, purpose of the guidelines. The very last sentence is, as explained below, ex parte contacts are not prohibited. What is required is they be revealed on record. If there is ex parte, would you have to abstain then from voting?
No, you wouldn't. You just have to put that on the record. So document the information that you received. If it's done in that form, we may very well supplement that so that everybody has an opportunity to consider that evidence at the time of decision making.
Okay, I guess I'm confused. I thought that if you were involved in ex parte per se, then you could not vote on the issue because you've already broken the law in the ex parte.
Well,
I thought.
Yeah, what that says is certainly if you can avoid having that communication, that ex parte communication, that's the best course. But there are going to be instances where you just can't avoid it. Somebody starts talking about something. How's the weather, Richard? And hey, by the way, you need to know this about the project, and all the way, all of a sudden, there are two or three sentences into it. Then what you need to do is just disclose that, but it doesn't mean that you then have a conflict where you cannot participate in the vote of that. If that was the case, quite frankly, you know, you could easily, if you were nefarious, go out and conflict out two or three council members, and just depending on what side of a project you were on, you could prevail. So the remedy is to disclose it, make that information available for everybody, so that record is that record that is contained in the public. So everybody has an option or an opportunity, to vote on that with that knowledge.
If you've had ex parte, then when is it necessary for you to exhibit that you were involved in ex parte? When does that become mandatory?
You should do it as soon as possible. If it's a pending matter that you're then going to vote on, as soon as you know that you've got that information and you receive that information, you should then document. Obviously, if something, you know, a piece of property you're sitting around and somebody starts talking about it and it's not yet come before council, you should still take that opportunity. Once you realize that that may be a matter that's going to be or possibly coming before council, then you should document that.
Okay.
And then get it in the record as soon as the record's being established.
Last question, who do you document that with? You or the mayor?
Either me or the city clerk, yes.
Okay.
And then we'll make sure that it gets routed to that where the public record is kept.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah. And so one of the reasons that I wanted to make sure this came up was when those things happen, the point of ex parte is meaning that you get some information provided to you that nobody else does. So as long as it's brought up in a public hearing, so everybody receives the same information, and then the party that is opposed to what information you just brought up has a chance to answer to that, then it removes the ex parte part, and we just need to make sure that we disclose that to to make sure that everything's done fairly. We've had a couple of situations over the past couple of years where we handled it correctly because, you know, we started receiving emails and whatnot, but they were presented to Richard, and then that information was disclosed. So things were handled properly, but it's just real easy for things like that to get away from us if we're not prepared as to how to handle that when that happens. Of course, obviously, if somebody starts wanting to talk to you about something like that, the best thing to do is call a timeout and explain to them that's not proper. So, anyway, any further questions for Richard?
Mayor, I had two questions.
Yeah.
Ex parte does not apply to between council members and city staff.
Correct.
And then you mentioned that, and just to see where this is, but you mentioned about obviously that if there's a land use, you don't want us hopping in our car to go out and look at that land use. But I would think there's a little bit of curiosity if I just happen to be driving by the place and look over, yeah, okay, now I see what the guy's talking about. How do you avoid that? I mean, how do you, am I to put a blinder on when I drive by a public hearing notice? I mean, how do you, can, I mean, is that anything unlawful doing that? I mean,
it's not expected that you then change your route as you drive. But if you observe something that you are then going to base your decision on, and it wasn't something that was presented in the record, you should at least make that. Now, this is just you, obviously, not assembling to go out and meet and look at a place. But if there's something that you observed, you should say, you know, on this date I went out there and I saw this type of thing. Or, you know, have staff document whatever it is so that it then comes out in the public hearing. I mean, again, it all goes back to that due process. And that information that your decision is based on is information that's in the public record. So as long as it's in the public record, if you notice a tree with a bird in it and pictures with the tree and the bird in it, you know, you can be rest assured that that's then in the public record and not have to worry about it. It's just that information that's not part of the public record that has to be for the due process considerations.
So if we see something that is already publicly, we don't have to declare that we saw it.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't go, I guess, looking around for something unique, but if you drive by and it's something that you see, you know, a sign that's then in the public record, you know, that's what you're doing is you need to base your decision on that information in the record. So, and again, if you know, if you've asked then staff for questions, although, you know, it's a little bit different situation, but that information, if you're then basing it on information, you want to make sure it's in the public record too. I mean, it all really comes down to that due process consideration and that information that you have, and then the entire council has in the public, the opponent and the proponent have as part of that consideration. So you don't want to go looking for or finding facts that are not known that you're going to use in basing your decision.
So your recommendation would be if I have questions, then I shouldn't ask staff until it's presented to council.
That would be the best way, yeah, to do it.
And if I do happen to ask staff, I should disclose what my...
Or staff could present a memo to supplement the public record with your questions.
For the most part, I mean, if you see something that's public, that's part of the packet, and you look at that and you just walk up and you say, Wendy, I'm confused about this part, and she explains that little part, you know, I don't see any harm with that type of a thing, but then you could actually be clouding things. So you could actually, in the public hearing portion, say, well, I had a question on this, I asked Wendy, and this was the explanation. So then you're covered. I mean, if it, But if it's just a simple question about spelling or the way something was worded or what's this symbol, then, you know, that's certainly appropriate. But if you start getting into the weeds of it, then maybe you just need to make sure that we disclose things so that we're not stepping over the line and getting ourselves in trouble. The other day I had a public records request for all of my emails of February 1st. And I thought, well, that's kind of random. It's like one day. Who knows what about what happened on one day? And turned out all the other mayors and county commissioners had the same one. And I think we're going to be graded on the Sunshine Law and our response to that public records request. But, you know, so things like that pop up. So the Idaho Press Tribune has record of all of my emails for February 1st. So anybody that replied anything to me, unless it had something to do, I think we did have one email about a land use that was excluded from that release, and Richard sent a response and put the code in as to why that was out. But everybody that sent me an email that day, Idaho Press Tribune has that. So we're all subject to that at any point in time, so we just need to make sure that we're paying attention. Don't put things in email that you're not willing to shout from a mountaintop. Life will be good. But so that's kind of why this came up. We just want to make sure that everybody's on the same page, and we do know how to react when something comes up. So anything further for Richard? Richard, did you have any more?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you. Very nice class. Ordinances 8A, second reading of ordinance number 2016-06, change in council meeting time. This is an ordinance of the City Council of CUNA, Idaho, amending CUNA City Code KCC 1-6-3A council meetings by changing the meeting time from commencing at 7 o'clock p.m. to 6 o'clock p.m., striking the pre-council meeting language and providing an effective date. This is the one we decided to put on the slow track, so this is the second reading. Yes, you may.
Richard?
Yes, ma'am.
I thought at the last meeting we talked about including the bit about election days in here.
Oh, it's actually in the language.
You're right.
I thought I saw that in there.
Mm-hmm. So that'll be in there for the third reading?
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. And then I noticed that there's several spots where, like, City Council or City Hall or City seem like they should be capitalized and aren't. So if you want to just clean that up too for the final one that we passed, that'd be awesome. Thank you. It has the stuff about the holiday, but not the...
Oh, right. It's the holiday. It didn't include the other. Okay.
That's it.
Good catch.
I'm a stickler for that.
Okay. Ordinance 8B, first reading of Ordinance 2016-07, Calhoun Liberty Investments Annexation. This is an ordinance annexing certain real property, to wit, parcel number S13232124046, situated in the unincorporated area of Ada County, Idaho, and contiguous to the corporate limits of the City of CUNA, into the City of CUNA, Idaho, establishing the zoning classifications of said real property, directing that copies of this ordinance be filed as provided by law, and providing an effective date. As we talked about this earlier, is there any reason to put this on the slow track, or can we waive the first three readings? Okay. So that motion is before council.
You don't just you don't want to slow.
No, they said you can fast track.
The mayor, I move that we waive the three readings of 2016-07 ordinance.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance 2016-07. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Mayor, I move that we approve ordinance 2016-07.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve ordinance 2016-07. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Council President Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Bubun Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Ordinance number 2016-07 is approved. Consideration, next.
Mayor, I move that we approve a summary publication of ordinance 2016-07.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve a summary publication of ordinance 2016-07. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Mayor Council discussion items. So we wanted to put together a committee for insurance coverage and fiscal policies. So do we have any volunteers for that committee?
I thought we already did that. I thought Richard and I were going to do that. You're talking about employee insurance coverage?
Did we do that already?
No, it hadn't been formally done.
Okay.
I thought we discussed it.
So does that mean Richard and Pat want to do that?
I don't have a problem doing it.
Okay, we just need a motion as such.
Can I make a motion for myself?
Sure.
Okay. Mayor, I move that we place myself and Councilmember Cardoza on the Insurance Coverage and Fiscal Policies Committee.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to have Richard and Pat be on the Insurance Coverage and Fiscal Policy Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And so John Marsh will be heading that up. Announcements. Did anybody have any announcements they would like to make?
No.
We found out today that the roundabout is like a week ahead of schedule. So
nice.
That's a good thing. I think I already told you we had the Treasure Valley Partnership meeting here yesterday, and 10 of our local mayors and one Ada County Highway District Commissioner and one Canyon County Highway District Commissioner here in CUNA. They were all happy to be here and everything went real well. So, did anybody else have anything they want to discuss? Okay, we do need an executive session.
I move we adjourn to executive session to discuss potential litigation, pursuant to Idaho Code 74-206F. And 74-206C to discuss potential litigation and potential property acquisition.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to go to executive session under 74-206F and 74-206C. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Council President Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Bubun Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And we wanted
before or after the break.
Did you want to work? Okay. And then we wanted to have Chris and I think